So how blessed we are to have had someone like Frances in this world. She really has been the wise one in my life, the wise woman. And I'm enormously grateful for her mentoring in several areas. And when I come to the personal stories about our journey together, you will hear of her different gifts. But I'd like to talk about, first of all, what I saw as core qualities in Frances. And the first one is integrity. I knew from the first moment I ever attended something with Frances and met her, there was a foundation of enormous integrity. When somebody has integrity, you can trust them. And I felt from the very beginning, Frances was someone I could completely trust. Not only was there integrity, but that integrity came out of an authenticity. She lived what she taught. She embodied what she taught. There wasn't a separation between the teaching and her being and her way of life. And that was authentic and deeply, deeply integrated. So those elements were very recognizable for me from the beginning. An integrity built upon authenticity, on integration, and trust. It elicited trust. There was a foundation. I also, part of the reason that I felt that integrity is Frances never felt the need to have a huge following. She never felt the need to be a huge figure. She was in the creation of transpersonal psychology. She's really the foundational woman surrounded by a lot of famous men. But she never felt the need to have a big response. That's an enormous gift. It was part of the integrity that I recognized right away. There wasn't a floor show. There was integrity instead. There wasn't an attempt to wrap people into her point of view. There was integrity and respect for each individual. That I find amazing, because often spiritual teachers can become like rock stars, and a lot of it's charisma. That wasn't where she was going, and it's not where she came from. It's what gave her that kind of authenticity that I so deeply appreciated. And the second wisdom, it was evident for me from the very beginning, Frances was a wise woman. And in her work, she blended together the human and divine. She had the wisdom of the transpersonal perspective, the wisdom of the divine in the human being, and knowing that from many different traditions. And she also had the wisdom of what a human life entails, what human vulnerability is, what human distortion can be. She saw with both eyes the human and divine in people. And there was a deep, compassionate acceptance and affirmation in that wisdom. It's incredibly beautiful. So you've heard me, especially this last year, quote her, because I think it's a seminal quote for the change of consciousness in our time, in which she speaks of, what's asked of us for the wisdom in our time is that we're able to see from multiple perspectives and not think that this cancels out that we can see from multiple perspectives and we can undo the shackles of ideology. That's the way forward for the planet. It's one of the best ways I've known, quotes I know, to articulate what we have to grow into all over the planet. So as the Dalai Lama so wisely and wonderfully says, Buddhism is the best religion, for me. And he also said, you may wonder why there's not one religion. He said there's not one religion because no one religion would meet all the different temperaments of people and all the different needs. We need a multiplicity of religions, like there's a multiplicity of people. So that's what Francis was also earmarking. What's asked of us in our time, if we want to serve the soul of humanity moving into a greater consciousness with planetary awareness, we have to learn to see from multiple perspectives. How do I see this from the Buddhist perspective? How do I see it from the Sufi perspective? How do I see it from the Jungian perspective? How do I see it from the Judeo-Christian perspective? Then I can learn to see how something is seen by millions of people all over the world, and they don't have to cancel each other out. I'm also learning to understand humanity then much more deeply. The third, Francis' capacity to hold the center. You've heard me speak about it, and for me she was an incredible example of that, especially when I worked together with her for spiritual guidance. I was the one seeking guidance. Her capacity to hold the center modeled for me in some very difficult situations how to do it. She was it. It's one of the ways that I saw it so powerfully. And Francis also was brought into groups in crisis. Sometimes organizations were in conflict. And she was always someone who could stand in the center and not be pulled into the polarization. That's an enormous gift. And that's, I think, what made her so deeply respected by such a broad group of people and organizations. So I mentioned the last time I saw her, her husband, Roger Walsh, who was also very much involved in the development of transpersonal psychology, said to me with great pride, Francis certainly wasn't invested in it, but he said, you know, there was a survey done in the personal growth movement or the psychological movement, spiritual movement, who were truly wise people? And then he said with quite a wonderful smile, Francis was the only person who appeared on both lists. That's her integration. That's also a sign of her integrity and respect for her wisdom. People saw it. They experienced it. Her capacity to hold the center when organizations could be in conflict or difficulty. And people mutually, from all sides, respected her integrity. So holding the center, and the last, I would say, not the last quality she had for sure, but the last of the four that I would earmark, was a gracious clarity. I always felt coming into the presence of Francis, I came into a clarity that immediately would enter into me. And when you go to different spiritual teachers, you experience different divine qualities. So I experienced different central qualities in Pure Vilayat, different central qualities in Reb Zalman. But Francis, it was always like coming into some place lucid. It was so clear. And she was clear. That's why it was that way. And there was a graciousness about Francis. She wasn't someone hugely extroverted with enthusiasm, but there was a graciousness, a gracious compassion, a gracious kindness, a little bit of formality with it, but a beautiful graciousness in the way people were received, the way people were treated. She even laughed graciously. So I want to honor that about her. I'm very appreciative to be a recipient of that. So I'm going to go through some of my experiences with Francis and tell some stories. First time I met her, I went to a seminar in New York City because she was well known in the field of transpersonal psychology, which was just emerging then. And I wanted to hear someone who was involved in the founding of it all. The only thing I remember Well, there are two things I remember from that first meeting, and they have been enormously important. She said, however high the projection on a spiritual teacher, know that it can also go all the way down equally. That's part of a Jungian understanding about the balance that needs to take place in the psyche. So that was a very helpful piece to know. No matter how high it goes, it also then can flip and go all the way down to that extreme in the opposite way. And the other piece she said, because she had also been a therapist to a number of spiritual teachers and people involved in the spiritual path, she said, remember, we're all human until the end. Nobody gets out of being human. No matter how realized someone is, if a person they have deeply loved dies, there is a loss. That's a very helpful piece to know, because in spiritual bypassing, often what people want to do is to bypass their humanity so they don't feel those pieces. So those two were the things that I took from the very first conversation. Now, I had no idea how important those things would be at that point. It was just what I remembered. And then as my life unfolded, much to my very great surprise, Pir Vallide asked me if I would be the Secretary General of the Sufi Order and a Vice President. And I said to him, I really have no interest in organization at all, and I'm not particularly good at it. So I just want you to know that. And he said, well, it's not your organizational skills that I'm looking for, it's your capacity for harmony. And we need to harmonize things right now in the order. Now, I only knew Pir Vallide from going to programs with him in a very dramatic first couple of meetings in which he really reflected profoundly my soul to me. But I never knew him as a person. I mean, I knew him in a certain context, the archetype of the teacher. When I was invited to become the Secretary General, I was someone who would work with him on a daily basis. So it was meeting the human being, Pir Vallide. And Thasrud Inayakan speaks of there's a critical point in the spiritual journey where one discovers the human imperfections of the teacher. And that enables the next piece of the journey to unfold. It's not as if the teacher's hiding their humanness. We only see their archetypal aspects. So working on a regular basis with Pir Vallide, working with his humanness, especially being asked to be responsible for the organization. And he didn't like organization at all. He didn't trust organization. He gave no interest to organization. So basically, what I realized after getting into the job, he had basically asked me to be responsible for the shadow pieces. That's not where he had interest, and he really, based upon his experience, didn't trust it, didn't invest in it, and continually tried to undermine it. Because one of his concerns, and that's a legitimate concern, is that the organization becomes the end in itself. That's what's happened to institutionalized religion, and not the teachings, and not the practices, and not the mystical current. So when I stepped into that role, I wasn't fully aware of how organization was seen. That was one piece of it. The other piece is I didn't know Pir Vallide as a human being. And as I entered into that role, I had to work also with a human being, not just the archetype of a spiritual teacher. And I entered into multiple roles. A spiritual teacher, my employer, I became a confidant to him, in which he shared some very deep personal stuff that were involved. And in some ways, I was like the oldest child in the family, the bridge between the parent figure and the other children, trying to somehow create a dialogue and understanding, transfer feelings and information, etc. I also did not know that Pir Vallide at that point had received not a very positive health diagnosis. In fact, it was quite painful and quite scary for what that would mean in the future, and had just undergone a deep personal crisis in his life. All that I did not know when I said yes to the job. What became extremely clear to me quite soon is I needed to have someone to turn to. Someone not involved in the organization, but someone who knew deeply about the archetype of the teacher, the archetype of the student, spiritual path, about spiritual organizations. And I immediately thought of Francis. I was in that role for 12 years, and when I tell you, I mean it from the bottom of my heart, she got me through. She was always a person I could turn to, and I always knew there would be confidentiality. She had enough distance but enormous understanding. And one of the key things that she taught me was one, to hold my center, but the other is how to stand in the tension of the opposites. She was able to both hear the difficult pieces and at the same time hold the reality of the value. She modeled for me consistently how to do that. Don't split. Don't go into just idealism, and don't go into it's all shadow. Hold them both. So at the end of every conversation, she would reroute me in my center when I would call up in the midst of all this conflict in an organization. And she would also model for me how to hold the opposites. There is enormous good, and yes, there is shadow that is not being dealt with. The shadow cannot be denied, nor can the enormous good be denied. These are both realities, and you need to hold them, not split them. That was a profound teaching, not just simply as a Jungian concept or a concept from another tradition. She modeled it consistently again and again and again, so I was able to learn how to internalize that. Now, another piece that was very helpful that I didn't expect was when I was asked to be in that role, I didn't realize the projections I would get being the closest person to Pure Vilayat in terms of working. All of a sudden, you move from a peer relationship to the person who has the most access, who has the closest connection, working connection with Pure Vilayat, and that elicits all kinds of projections. So she was enormously helpful to me in dealing with those projections, understanding those projections, that they come with the role. And how to carry those projections, how not to get lost in them. She was enormously helpful, again, in holding the center. So an example of that is one day Pure Vilayat was very upset about our spiritual community, the abode. Something had happened, he was very upset. And he said to me, we're moving the secretariat, which were the National North American offices. They were at the abode, we're going to move them someplace else. So I was quite shocked, and I said, well, Pure Vilayat. And we had a conversation that lasted a few days about it, impossible places, etc. And then he, as always, went off to travel to go to other places, and I thought it was all forgotten about. About a year later, Pure Vilayat calls me at home and says, well, Atum, I just spoke to the leaders in Seattle and told them that we're moving the secretariat here, and they're all very excited and they'll be very willing to help, etc. That was the first time I heard it. Already the people in Seattle have been told. People at the abode were not told. And then it came out. So there was this huge conflict of feeling. What does it mean that the secretary will be taken out of the abode? What will happen to the abode, etc.? And some of those concerns were legitimate. I was naive about shadow in organization in this way, and also in my role. I did not realize the people who did not like that decision didn't want to deal with the fact that Pure Valiant made it. So I was the one who made it and influenced Pure Valiant. You with me?
Yeah.
That I had all the influence and I worked Pure Valiant to make that decision because I wanted to move to Seattle. Now, Pure Valiant had already told me I was taking over some responsibility of the training of leaders and some of the pieces he no longer wanted to carry. He said, you can move any place in the United States, Atu, if you're not happy at the abode or if you just want to try something else anywhere. But then that became the piece. And I you know, that's how you learn about shadow in organization. First of all, it would never be my job or what I think of influencing Pure Valiant, just because I personally want to move the secretariat. But people did not want to deal with the reality that he made the decision. So imagine, he's easily manipulated by me into what I want. And that was true of close friends. They would say to me, well, I hear it's really because you want to move to Seattle. And they'd look at me with a sense of belief in their eyes. Frances was an enormous help during that process. She is the one person that I could turn to because everybody had different opinions. The Sufi Order was polarized about that. And the rumor kept spreading, I was the power behind the throne. I was not the power behind the throne. I was completely shocked by the conversation to go to Seattle. So that's where having a place to turn. When Dilgo Khyentse Rinpoche speaks up, who are you going to turn to? Again and again and again in those kinds of pieces, I turned to Frances Vaughan. And again, she stood with me. You know, Atum, you know what's real. You know what really happened. Whatever happens with the organization or the group, stand in yourself. Hold your center. Don't get caught up in all the drama about it. Hold your center. And eventually the secretariat was moved, fulfilling Pure Valiant's desire at that point. Now, I'd like to tell a story, one more about my involvement in the Sufi Order. There was a generational gap at a certain point. Pure Valiant was getting older. We were a generation, many of us who started following and studying with him in our 20s. We were now in midlife in our 40s. And there was more of a gap than there was there before. So some of the senior people had felt there were certain changes that needed to be made that would enable the teachings to have much more effect in the world. And we had that common belief, let us say, perhaps coming out of our generation. And we would have these meetings. And one by one, each of us would try to frame it in a way that we hope Pure Valiant would understand. And one by one, he didn't get it. So this went on for a couple of years. We'd come to the meetings, and this person would say it this way, this person would say it that way. I would say it this way. We didn't know what to do. And it was really out of love of the teachings and the great value of the practices. So I suggested that we meet with Frances Vaughan. So we met and we're in this home and she says, well, she spends the whole morning by saying, tell me what your experience is. So there are about 10 of us there and each one tells their experience. Lunch break comes. The whole morning we've heard everybody's experience. And then she comes back after lunch and we're all there together. And she just looks at us. And she says, what are you going to do if he never changes? That changed my life. That changed my life. It was a moment of enormous liberation. What are you going to do if he never changes? You're investing a huge amount of your life in trying to make this man change. He may not change. What are you going to do? And then I realized, what am I doing? He created the organization. He's the primary teacher. We've said what we had to say. I need to focus back on my own life and my own journey, not changing his opinion. It opened a huge door for me. And it created an appropriate kind of detachment from the way I had interpreted my role in the Sufi order. And I think it was probably the beginning of what eventually became the spiritual guidance community. The movement outside of the framework of the order, with Pir Vilayat's blessing. But that question was a moment of, I could feel everything crack inside of me. And this enormous liberation. I don't have to hold that anymore. I don't have to invest in it anymore. I've said what needed to be said. Pir Vilayat will make his choice. It's his choice. Liberation. I'm enormously grateful to her for that moment. I'll never, ever forget it. Now, there was a huge passage occurring in my life. Very deep passage. And I was really lost. So I met with Frances. I went down to California to meet with her. And she said, well, what's going on, Atun? So I said to her, well, this is unfolding. This could happen. That could happen. Whatever, 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 whatever. And then she also gave me a seminal teaching. She was quiet. That's the way Frances would. She would listen, 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 take it in. And then she said to me, well, Atun, this could happen. 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 One of them could happen. They all could happen. But the only thing you know is things are changing. And I felt my being go, boom, right into the center. Because that's all I did know. All I knew that was real was at the present moment, there's change. All of that was imagined possibilities, projections onto the future. None of them were happening. She brought me, boom, back into the present moment, back into my center, and rooted me. And I stopped all the scenarios. This could happen, that could happen. What will I do if this happened? Who knows if they'll ever happen? I have to wait and see how it unfolds. That's what I meant about clarity. You see that quality? She saw it so clearly. You're lost in all of the machinations of the mind and the projection and what could happen. But the only thing that's real in the present moment is changes occurring. It grounded me profoundly and helped me find it was the foundational piece through that whole process. So liberation and awakening was another form of a liberation. Enormous gift. And Frances, you know, Frances would sit there very calmly, listen to the whole thing, and then just drop these enormous bombs that changed her life and say them with great clarity and graciousness in a rather soft voice. No drama. It's one of the reasons I really loved working with her. She was very free of drama. And that clarity, it's a clarity that releases drama. So you can see very, very clearly. Now, I learned to be a teacher, the way I teach, from Frances Vaughan. So it became very clear. In fact, Pir Vilayat used to say, I'm a transitional figure. In the future, there won't be gurus. In fact, they may be replaced by transpersonal psychotherapists. So I thought, how wonderful to put together Pir Vilayat with two really seminal transpersonal psychologists in a conference. So I organized a conference with Pir Vilayat, marvelous man, Jack Engler, who was a monk with Thomas Merton, a younger monk with Thomas Merton, did some training there, became a major Vipassana teacher, and then also worked with schizophrenics in the Harvard Clinic, and Francis Vaughn. So Pirlai was a little nervous to be with these big figures in transpersonal psychology, although he was an enormously big figure in spirituality. And I also felt that he had an older idea of psychology from an earlier time when he studied it. And what a great place for dialogue. He loved good dialogue. So in his nervousness, each of them had, an hour and a half initial presentation. Pirlai got up, and he was like the 4th of July fireworks. He said every brilliant idea it had in the last 20 years, and they were like explosions all over the sky, fireworks. But when I turned around and looked at the audience at the end, everyone looked like completely overwhelmed. And it was mainly filled with therapists and spiritual teachers. What do I do with that? Where do I start? What's the process? What's the progression? They were overwhelmed. And I saw it in their bodies, their faces, their eyes, etc. But his was fireworks. Next came Jack Engler. Jack Engler had done this incredible piece in the Transpersonal Psychology Journal where he mapped out mystical experiences, early stages of human development, and schizophrenia. It was a brilliant, brilliant teaching. And his compassion for schizophrenics, because he understood what was behind the behavior, was both brilliantly wise and incredibly compassionate. So he mapped out these three things like they were in the article. He's a beautiful man also. But when it ended and I turned around, they were all like this. Where do you start? Where do you start? I mean, this is the culmination of this man's huge journey. And I could see nobody knew where to start. Yes, that's brilliant, but where do I begin? Then Francis came third. Francis did integrated exercises with people in pairs and in small groups. She had people do certain reflective exercises inside of themselves. When she was done, I turned around and I looked at the group. Everyone was grounded, assimilated, and knew exactly something to begin with when they went home. And I saw something. First of all, I saw that's the way I want to teach. Second of all, I saw, and there's no value judgment here, it's not one is better than the other. Some are in love with ideas and some are in love with people. For some people, the ideas come first and people come second. For other people, people come first and ideas are second. So what Frances represented is the key for her was how much do you feed them? Based upon how much can they assimilate, be grounded, and know where to begin. In that sense, she really modeled for me, I saw it very clearly, this is the way I want to go, because people are more important for me than ideas. And there's truly no value judgment there. People love both, but then it's a question of where you're most connected. So Francis modeled that exquisitely, and I'll never forget it. There was a group in Germany who asked me to come and do a training in transpersonal psychology. There was no place in Europe at that time that offered a PhD in transpersonal psychology. So I accepted, but I kept writing to them saying, what do you want me to teach? What do you want me to teach? And I never got a clear answer. So I said to Francis, I'm invited to teach, but I keep asking them, what do you want me to teach? And they never really answer. And in that typical Francis, very clear, very gracious way. She said, Atum, if they knew what they wanted you to teach, they wouldn't need you to come. You need to figure out what it is you're going to teach. They don't know the field. So you're asking them for something that they don't know how to evaluate. That's that clarity again, and that graciousness, and that liberation from the knot that I was in, expecting that they would define it. She had that quality consistently. Now, there was an article her husband wrote, Roger Walsh, and it created a huge response in another very famous psychologist, whose response was rather brutal for that time. And in Trump's time, we were used to it. But in that time, it was shocking, at least for me and for many people I knew. And at the same time, this psychologist, very famous, Frances and her husband, Roger, were going to be at a conference about 6 months later, put on by Common Boundary, which was an organization that sought to bring together the psychological and the spiritual world. So I saw Frances, and really, from my perspective, what this person said, there were different other ways of saying it. That's perhaps the best way I can say it. And I said to Frances, I was upset about it. You know, this, the way it was said, I mean, I just can't believe it. And this is Frances. Hold the center, extremely clear. The only thing she said to me is his reaction shows you that what Roger wrote hit a complex in him. She didn't say anything negative about the man. She didn't in any way diminish his contribution. She just said a deeply wise and insightful thing. Look at the hugeness of the reaction. That comes when a complex is hit and the huge response from the complex comes forth. That's all she said. She wasn't about to be pulled into the drama of it. Her clarity once again, her holding the center, her graciousness. That was actually an incredibly gracious response. There's all kinds of things one could say, especially when you feel your husband has been publicly attacked. Integrity. It was also authentic. That's exactly how she saw it. But huge integrity in the way she carried herself. There are a couple of things that Frances said to me about how to work in my own work. And one thing that she said to me, which also Helen Luke said the same thing. Interesting. She's the other wise woman mentor, not as present in my life as Frances. Frances was there for several decades. Frances said to me, Atum, be careful about what you share about your inner life and your personal life. You do not want it for public consumption. It will affect your inner life, and it will affect your outer life if you put it out for public consumption. Helen Luke told me the same thing, Jungian analyst, amazing woman that I met when she was 88. She said the very same thing. Don't put out your inner life or your deeper personal life because it will then be gobbled up with projections on it and interpretation and curiosity. That has been an enormous help. It's not for public consumption. Sometimes I do share things personally, but they're in a training with a group of people that have taken several trainings with me, and it gives a lived example. But it was a very beautiful warning, because in our time, people are putting everything out. And then it diminishes your inner life. That's what they were both saying to me. The other thing that I pass on, I really loved this insight about Frances. We ended up in a conversation about someone involved in the psychological spiritual movement for whom we both have very deep respect. but she made a comment to me. This person had been very much identified with a certain organization and group and path, and then grew in a new direction. And she said to me, you know, when that happens, you don't want to deny the new growth of where you're going, but you don't have to be like a teenager and trash where you were. Separation doesn't have to take place that way. You can have gratitude for the previous stage and recognize I don't live there anymore, but leave with gratitude. Don't leave polarizing the situation, confusing people involved. Leave in the most harmonious way you can. So there are two pieces that were extremely important to me, and I'm very grateful, because that's also how I moved out of the Sufi order, for which I have enormous gratitude. But I also went forward with the blessing of Pir Vilayat. He said, this work that you're called upon, the spiritual guidance training, is for it's the message. It's for the larger world, not an esoteric school. And in fact, Pir Vilayat said to me, he said, when I brought up the issue, he said, don't do it in the Sufi order, Achum. You want to be free. You want to be free to follow your inspiration. And then he said, I wish I could do the same. Be free. Later on, when I saw him, he said to me, Atun, you were so wise to do it outside of the Sufi order. He said, well, I had a little help, a little guidance from someone. It's a beautiful thing to remember. How do you honor? Not just, well, I'm in the next phase, forget that and trash that. That's what the previous phase enabled me to go to the next phase. So I want to also mention, before I talk about our last meeting, where you can find the legacy of Francis Fawn in our trainings. So if you've done the spiritual guidance training, the first piece, there is a chapter called Stages and States in the Spiritual Journey. And there is a core teaching that I gathered from Francis Fawn's writing on how do you identify an authentic, valid spiritual teacher and an authentic, valid spiritual group. And what makes it not authentic? That's an enormously important piece, and there are 20 points from that. And I told Frances how grateful people were for it. It was something that she did earlier in her life, was in the Transpersonal Psychology Journal, I believe. And I said, I'd suggest that you make it available again because people are so grateful. There's a lot of confusion in those issues around the spirit. How do you evaluate? How do you discern, especially if it's all new to you? If you look at how we end the spiritual guidance training program, the last weekend we look at a completion process. And I learned that from Francis Fawn. I said, Francis, can you suggest a completion process? How do we bring things to completion? Because when they're not complete, we're fragmented as we go forward. It's from Francis that I got that completion process. And people have used it in all kinds of areas. They have used it in divorce. They have used it to complete one stage of a marriage, to move into another stage of a marriage. They've used it with their adult children to transfer into an adult relationship. They've used it to leave a vocation. People have used it in all kinds of ways. It is enormously beautiful. That's Francis. In the archetypal course, there is an archetype, the wise one. And there I took from one of Francis's presentations to us at the International Gathering, I took 15 points of wisdom. I asked her to address that. From your life's journey, Francis, what are the core pieces of insight and core practices that really worked for you? And that's in that particular, when we look at the archetype of the wise one, because she lived, embodied, that archetype. We also have a set of cards called called the Good Seed Rosary, which were the 40 quotes I identified as underlying all the trainings, and there are several in there by Frances Vaughan. So her work is, and she knew that. I said to her very clearly, your work continues, Frances. As I mentioned, each piece would be integrated. And there are references to her in other places. Also, as I've mentioned on her website, there are the two talks, on my website, there are the two talks that she gave at our international gathering. You are welcome to download them. If you know of anyone for whom that would be of value, please tell them. They do not have to have done the trainings and be part of the community. That's wisdom. Whoever needs it should benefit from it. And I'll give you one other example before of her clarity, her graciousness, and holding the center. At one of the international gatherings, beautiful person, I want to be very clear, this is not a criticism, asked a question, there are going to be difficult times ahead, we're in a huge ecological disaster, and the emotion accelerated and accelerated and accelerated. You could feel it sweeping through the group, the fear, the fear, the fear. Frances was quiet for a moment after the question and all the emotion that went with it. And then she said, there has always been suffering in the world. She cut it just like that. So when you look at, in Buddhism, when you look at the deity for wisdom, they carry a flaming sword. She cut all the fear with one sentence. Do you think there was not suffering in the world previously? Do you think that there won't be suffering in the world in the future? She stated the obvious. There has always been suffering. And now we know, based upon Gates Foundation just referred to that study again, and so did President Obama, by this study that has been done by an eco-psychologist at Harvard, we live in the least violent time in the history of the world. The least violent time in the history of the world. And they use all these different factors to measure it. That's an awakening. But what she did, I want to be really clear, she watched the fear build, spread like a wildfire. Because the person got possessed by the fear. And there's a lot of that in the world right now. All this fear, what's going to happen? And she just used the sword of the God of Wisdom, chum, cut it. Like she did with me in several meetings, grounded us. And went on with the other points of wisdom. Don't become possessed by fear. Don't be taken away. So I would like to share my last meeting with Frances. And here again, as I said, she's the person I turned to when I wanted clarity, when I wanted centeredness, when I wanted to understand how to hold opposites. So I had met several people who had studied with a spiritual teacher, a very wonderful woman, and deeply engaged in her work, a very committed person, beautiful, beautiful work involved in transpersonal psychology, came out of the Basque culture with enormous wisdom. And she died very suddenly. She had gone into the hospital and it was announced that she would come out the next day, and instead she died. And the organizational office shut down very soon. So the people I met were grieving, and they didn't know how to bring closure. They also didn't know how to go forward. So over the next many months, I kept meeting people who were really lost. You know, they were a part of this community. The office closed. How do you contact other people in the community? Is anybody going to do anything for closure? How will the people who want to continue in community go forward? So after listening and watching all that pain, I thought, all of a sudden I recognized, oh, that could happen in the spiritual guidance community. It was like, huh? I don't want that to happen in the spiritual guidance community. If I don't want that to happen, who can I talk to that's known many spiritual groups, spiritual teachers? Who can I talk to? The answer was extremely obvious, Francis. So I went to meet with Francis. Now, over the last couple of years, Francis had done the following things. I didn't put all of this together until the end. Until about 2 weeks ago when I heard she had died. First of all, she said to me, Atum, I'm closing my practice. And one of the things that people admired about Frances, even though she traveled all over the world, spoke at transpersonal conferences, etc., she still kept a private practice. So she was doing that level of the work continually. In her book, Shadows of the Sacred, comes out of her work as a therapist, transpersonal psychology therapist. And so she closed her practice down. And then she said, then what happened was she sold her big home, the home that she had had for a long time. She didn't want to carry it anymore. She sold it, and she and her husband Roger looked for retirement communities. And she found one she really liked. And the house was sold, the move was made to the retirement community. They have a beautiful, spacious, incredible condo. So that's where I visited her in this new home. And then she said to me, when we started talking in this last visit, she said, well, I've resigned all the boards. And then she said, and now I'm giving myself 1 whole year without any commitments. The year is completely open. Now, I could not have imagined in that meeting that Francis was going to die not that long after the meeting. This was just information. I said, you're great. How marvelous that you gave yourself that space, Francis. You have worked so astoundingly hard. And she smiled. Well, also, now in retrospect, look what she did. She completed. She's the one who gave me the completion process. She completed. No boards were disrupted. No clients were left abandoned. The house was sold, so that wasn't left as an issue and a difficulty. She cleared it all. And I wonder if someplace in her knew. Begin the clearing process. Begin the completion process. So that when the passage takes place, there's not a lot of conflict about unfinished business. When I brought up the issue of this woman's spiritual teacher had died and the grief and confusion in people, she and Roger both knew the woman quite well. And she said, actually, she's been sick, seriously sick for quite some time. For whatever reason, that was this woman's choice not to publicly convey that to her students. And I said, but Francis, you know, I could die. I fly a lot in airplanes. I could die in an airplane. So how does somehow one address that? And she said to me, Atum, write a legacy letter. That's what I've done. That's another piece she did for completion. Write a legacy letter. It's a very beautiful, easy conversation. And then I gave her a necklace that I bought in Bhutan. And it's very beautiful. It's like a shrine, and you can see through the window or you can open it. And it's the deity of wisdom. And I have a hard time remembering that it's a male figure because I always think of wisdom as feminine. In many of the myths, it's feminine. And because Francis, for me, was the wise woman. Pirvalayat and Reb Zalman held multiple things, but she was the wise one, the wise woman. So when I gave it to her, I referred to this Tibetan deity as the wise woman, because that's what Francis has been for me. She really held it. When I heard she died, it was a a shock. I was stunned, is the only way to put it, as were everyone who knew her. It was completely unexpected. It happened very quickly. People were stunned. And the peace that it has left me with, this is my last comment, is in the Tibetan Buddhist tradition, when you finish a retreat, when you finish a practice or with a group of people, you ask that whatever merit has been gathered, that merit may go for the benefit of all sentient beings. Now, Guru Rinpoche and Dogo Kensei Rinpoche speak of what happens in a degenerate age is people haven't been creating merit and offering it to the benefit of all sentient beings. So merit is depleted. Reb Zalman said the same thing. He said the archetypal level of the divine, it's anemic. The sacred rituals that gave back energy into the archetypal field of the divine, they're less and less and less. There's no giving back. The circle has been depleted. All three of them saying the same thing. But what I was struck with profoundly is Francis's life was a life of merit. Not just one practice, not just one retreat, her whole life was a life of merit. And where does that merit go? She has left a huge, unmeasurable amount of merit from her life. The new consciousness that she helped awaken, the distributing of that in many, many different countries, the emergence of a new field of psychology, but her being, there are accomplishments, but her being itself was merit. And I just had a sense of how that merit, without being known by name, is benefiting the world and continues. So how blessed we are to have had someone like Frances in this world, and the merit that she has brought and invested into the soul of humanity. And finally, I would suggest particularly listen to both recordings, but particularly to the last one. If you want to know what it means to bring your life to wholeness, the Jungian term, that the psyche through the whole journey is seeking wholeness. And in the second talk, I asked Frances to tell the story of her personal journey, which she had never done before. And she did brilliantly. And you can tell it's whole, because if you listen to the tape, there are no blips. A blip comes when a person hasn't brought something into wholeness. It hasn't been integrated, it hasn't been assimilated and digested. And you can feel the wholeness of her life. It's all integrated. She did it. She did the work. So wholeness is a word that has a lot of mystery around it. You need to know what it is living and listen to that talk. It's a beautiful example of it. So Francis, thank you for the enormous way that you have benefited my life and benefited all the people in the spiritual guidance community who have heard the enormous richness of your teaching. Blessings, blessings, blessings. And Roger, huge blessings to you. I know that you were an immeasurable gift to each other, that you find your way forward. Amen.